Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast presented by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Our podcast is here to educate you on the latest research, caregiver strategies, and available resources for fighting back against Alzheimer's disease. I'm your host, Nathaniel Chin. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to Dementia Matters. I'm here with Dr. Art Walasek. Dr. Walasek is a board-certified geriatric psychiatrist and professor of psychiatry at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He is the co-leader of the Outreach, Recruitment, and Education Corps of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center and the leader of the Public Health Pillar of the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Institute. Dr. Walasek provides care to older adults with depression, anxiety, and dementia. Welcome, Dr. Walasek.
It's great to be here, Nate. Thank you very much for inviting me.
I'm going to start with by asking you, how often do you see patients who come in with concerns about their changing mental health, but you discover the underlying issue is actually dementia or the early part of Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah, great question. And I think that's colored somewhat by the population that I see. So if I were seeing primarily 20 to 50-year-olds, this would be a pretty unlikely scenario, although not entirely impossible. But I see folks in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and it's a much more common scenario there. So it's definitely not uncommon that someone comes to me with depression and anxiety, problems sleeping, problems making decisions, problems with energy, or family members might comment on this as well, that, you know, that their relative is not as active or as interested as they used to be. Could it be depression? Which is certainly a reasonable question. One of the first steps we'll do, in particular, if someone has never been depressed or anxious or had any sort of mental health issues before, is to really think through, well, are there some medical or neurologic things that could be going on that could be causing these symptoms? And very high up on the list would be a cause of dementia, like Alzheimer's disease or stroke or Parkinson's disease. All of those could present with what we would typically think of as mental health symptoms like depression or anxiety or insomnia or a whole nother category we haven't talked about yet, psychosis, which involves hallucinations or feeling like people are trying to poison you or harm you or things like that. So in addition to thinking about someone's thyroid, their vitamins, their electrolytes, medications, we also think about, well, maybe there's a cognitive problem going on here, and that is either causing or contributing to the depression, anxiety, other mental health symptoms they're experiencing.
And we're going to get into those psychosis symptoms that you talked about, but there is also late-life depression, late-life anxiety, where a person doesn't have those symptoms during the earlier part of their life. It must be hard for you to differentiate the two, though, when you first meet someone.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are kind of two broad populations that I see. Folks who have had mental health issues, perhaps for much of their lives, maybe even dating back to their childhood. They may have a strong genetic history, family history of mental health illness or mental illness. They may have had trauma or other significant problems when they're growing up. And now they've simply aged with all those problems. So now I'm seeing them after 30, 40, 50 years of depression. So that's kind of one group. And that group is at higher risk of developing dementia as well. So it's in the back of my mind, in particular, if someone is not getting better or they look different than they had before, kind of wondering, could dementia be a possibility? And then there's another group. There's another group that really has never had significant mental health symptoms throughout their lives, or maybe they've had kind of mild symptoms that have not really needed much in the way of treatment, but now they're presenting with pretty significant depression or anxiety or other symptoms. And that group could be, it could just be straightforward depression and anxiety, and we get them into the right treatment and they're recovered and, you know, doing great after that. But that group is also the group that makes you nervous for, could it be that there's a dementia that's causing all this?
And you did just touch on it briefly, but what is the relationship between mental health and dementia?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the diagnosis. So Probably the clearest relationship are the folks who have never been depressed before, and now they're depressed in late life, so a late onset depression. So roughly after age 65 is the first episode of depression. Those folks are at significantly higher risk of developing dementia. So the numbers I typically cite are something like about half of those people will have a diagnosis of dementia within 5 years. And so what that kind of suggests is that maybe that depression is an early sign that something is awry, that, you know, that that there are very, very early signs of Alzheimer's or stroke or some other neurologic process going on. And the very early part of it is depression, but then later on it's going to show up as the more classic dementia kind of picture. So that's probably where it's kind of clearest. There's another condition called bipolar disorder, where people go back and forth between having depression and periods of heightened energy and activity called mania. Those folks are at higher risk of developing dementia. If you've had multiple recurrent episodes of depression, those folks are at higher risk of developing dementia. Finally, the other group that comes to mind, well, two other groups. Schizophrenia, so people who have schizophrenia, which is a chronic illness involving hallucinations and paranoia and things like that, they're at higher risk of dementia. That's sort of a complicated story. People with schizophrenia smoke a lot more than people who don't have schizophrenia, so that might lead to higher risk of stroke. We prescribe medications that can raise cholesterol and blood sugar, and that in turn can lead to higher risk of stroke or Alzheimer's disease. So it's a little more complicated of a story there. And then finally, the other group that will come to mind are people who have had alcohol use disorders throughout their lives. So drinking to a level that's getting them into trouble with their jobs, with their relationships, and potentially medically, those folks are higher risk of developing dementia also.
Now, in my clinic, my memory clinic, a common question is, does having an anxiety disorder or just being an overly anxious person increase one's risk of developing dementia or just any form of cognitive impairment?
Yeah, that's a great question. That, I think, is much less clear. You know, anxious folks worry, and one of the things they worry about, especially as they age, is their cognition, is their memory. Whether that means they're being really perceptive and picking up on something that is in fact a signal of later they're going to develop dementia, or if it's really just it's something else to worry about, that's less clear. So I think the relationship between anxiety and later development of dementia is not as clear-cut as like with depression or alcohol use or schizophrenia.
Okay, and our neuropsychologists will often say they won't test as well because they're so anxious on the testing. So it's hard to actually prove that they have objective deficits.
Absolutely. I mean, well, both anxiety and depression will interfere with how someone does on the testing. So, you know, if you're anxious, I mean, if you're overly anxious about any test, you're not going to do so well on that test. Same with depression. So if your motivation is low, your interest is low, your energy is low, you're just not going to put out as much effort on the test. And so you may not score as well on the testing. And so, yeah, it can be in that setting of trying to separate anxiety or depression from cognitive impairment, it can be really difficult to tease those things out.
Now, you also see people with dementia. And so one of my questions is, what mood conditions do you commonly see in those people who already have dementia?
Yeah, it's a really interesting issue that, I mean, 90% of people with Alzheimer's disease will have behavioral or psychological symptoms between diagnosis and death. So it's very common. And in fact, if you go back, and I think I looked up the 1984 criteria for Alzheimer's disease, it's right in there that there are emotional changes in the disorder. Those have made their way out. Now the focus is on cognition and on functioning. But the reality is that the behavioral and psychological symptoms are very, very common. And they can show up anywhere along the way, from mild cognitive impairment, where people are in between normal cognition and dementia, all through the various stages of dementia. So the most common things we see vary by kind of which stage we're talking about. So earlier on, it tends to be more depression, anxiety, and insomnia. Later on, it moves more into things like verbal aggression or saying inappropriate verbal things, you know, swearing or other inappropriate language, physical restlessness like pacing or wandering, or physical aggression, grabbing, biting, punching, throwing, and so on. And that's where some of the hallucinations and paranoia that we talked about earlier can show up as well, kind of more in the moderate stages, although any of these can show up anywhere along the way. One behavioral symptom that I think that's really I've been thinking about a lot more lately is apathy. And apathy can look a lot like depression. So with apathy, people lose interest, which is one of the criteria for depression. So it's easy to see how there might be overlap. Their energy is low, same thing. They sleep too much, same thing. So looks a lot like depression. But what tends to separate it out is that the person with apathy is apathetic, that they have apathy. So they're not all that, you know, they don't care so much. It doesn't really bother them. It tends to be the people around them who are flustered and see that the person has had a change in behavior, a change in their interests and their hobbies and activities, and it's the family who's really upset about it. So that is sometimes a clue to me that, oh, well, maybe this person has apathy, as opposed to depression, where the person is sad or hopeless or guilty or feeling like they're a burden on others, sort of those classic psychological symptoms, or feeling like they want to die. People with depression are at risk of suicide, and older adults, in particular older men, have the highest suicide rate of any demographic in the U.S. So that combo of sadness, hopelessness, guilt, suicidal thinking, some version of that would steer you more towards depression, whereas not having those things and just not having a lot of interest in activities would steer you more towards apathy. And that's an important distinction because we treat those differently. We kind of think about their course a bit differently.
Well, you just led to my next question, which is, in someone who has dementia, are depression, anxiety, apathy treatable? What do we do for these conditions?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yes is the short answer. So the good news is that there are treatments for all these conditions. The bad news is sometimes they don't work quite as well as they work in younger folks who don't have dementia. And then side effects can be a significant problem. That's on the medication side. And most of these things that I've mentioned, also there are options that don't involve medications. In fact, that's usually where we start because the medications can be quite problematic in older adults. So the sequence we would think about is, okay, what are the symptoms that are going on? Let's get kind of a good story there first. Second, well, are there medical things that could be contributing to this? Could there be pain? Could there be hearing problems or vision problems? Could there, as I mentioned earlier, vitamin levels be off or their thyroid be off? Could they have sleep apnea that, you know, that could cause depression and apathy? So looking at those things and a very careful look at the medication list as well. Often medications can contribute to depression, to anxiety, to insomnia, things like that. So presuming we've looked at that and ruled those things out or addressed those things and the person is still having symptoms, then we move on to, okay, well, what are the non-medication treatments that we have? And so the most effective treatment we have for all these is interestingly caregiver education and training. So that's one of the cool things about what you and I do is we're taking care often of a whole family or even a community of folks who are taking care of the person with dementia. And so we can intervene with the person with dementia or we can intervene with their family members and their caregivers. And the single most powerful intervention we have for behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia is caregiver education and training about the symptoms and how to respond to them and so on. Often we're doing things like asking families to keep the person more active during the daytime so that they're not bored and become depressed and so on. Make sure that they're sleeping well at night. And actually that ties with the staying active during the daytime. If you're inactive and in bed all day, you're not going to sleep all that well at night, and that's going to create new problems. We may do things like music therapy, pet therapy. There's actually interesting evidence to support that. Exercise, physical exercise, cognitive exercise, changing the way people communicate. So if a person with dementia is getting agitated and frustrated, perhaps the caregiver needs to ask questions differently or communicate in a different way. So we try to do all those things, or as many of those things are feasible, before we turn to medications. And often we have pretty good success rates with those non-pharmacological treatments. Now, if those don't work, or if there are safety concerns, like the person is aggressive towards themselves or others, then we might turn towards medication.
So if you could go over some of the categories mm-hmm. of the medications that you prescribe in mm-hmm. clinic.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably the most common medications I prescribe are antidepressant medications. So in general, antidepressants are pretty effective for both depression and anxiety in older adults, and generally pretty well tolerated, although there are some specific issues that arise in older adults that we don't see so much in younger adults, like falls. Basically, anytime I prescribe a medication that can get into the brain, the person can fall down. More likely they might fall down. And that's true of antidepressants, even though they aren't all that sedating necessarily, people can still fall down. So antidepressants often can cause stomach upset and, you know, lose appetite and lose weight. That's something we don't want to happen in older adults. So there's a whole long list of these potential issues, but in general, that category is pretty well tolerated. And interestingly, they might even work for things like agitation and some of the more aggressive kinds of things that we see. So antidepressants probably make up the bulk of the category that I prescribe. After that, it gets a little more tricky because the other categories are more problematic, more side effects. So the most tricky one is the antipsychotic category of medication.
And we'll go into that shortly.
Okay, great.
Is there anything you use specifically for anxiety?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's antidepressants again. So this strikes people as sometimes unusual, like I'm anxious while you're prescribing an antidepressant. Anxiety and depression overlap with each other quite a bit in terms of symptoms, in terms of what we think is going on with brain biology. And so it's not surprising that medications that work for depression tend to work for anxiety as well. There are specific anti-anxiety medications. Those often get pretty tricky in older adults. They can increase the risk of falls. They can cause memory problems. They can cause people to sleep too much. So we use them, but we try to use them pretty sparingly.
And I mean, you're speaking to the fact that there are side effects to everything we do, mm-hmm. which is why it's so important that we address the non-medication approaches first. Because there are very little side effects to those.
Exactly.
You know, one thing that I know we've talked about previously is light therapy,
mm-hmm.
especially in northern latitudes mm-hmm. where our days are not as long during the winter.
Yeah.
Does that approach still work in someone who's having memory issues?
It's in people of any age who have seasonal depression, where their mood is worse in the fall and winter and better in the spring and summer, which is probably true of most of us, but if you're clinically depressed in the fall and winter, light therapy works pretty well. It's comparable to an antidepressant and safer than an antidepressant and reusable. And once you buy a light box, there it is, and other people can use it and so on. So it's a really nice intervention. In older adults, and probably in younger adults too, it's been found that actually the seasons don't even matter. So even if you're depressed in the summer, it might work. And I think the reason that is for older adults is a lot of folks, even when the weather's beautiful and the days are long, may not get outside and may not get a lot of sunshine. And so light therapy may be effective even in non-seasonal depression. Now, when you move into the dementia category, there it gets trickier. So light therapy has generally not been shown to be quite as helpful. If someone is quite depressed, I would still give it a whirl, but I may not have quite as high hopes for it being effective. And it's probably not all that effective for agitation, sleep-wake cycle kinds of things. Light seems to kind of become less effective as the dementia progresses, unfortunately.
You know, I'd like to end this interview by asking, what should one do if they recognize mental health changes in themselves or their loved ones?
Yeah, get it assessed. I think one of the misperceptions of aging is that we should expect some problem with emotions. Like, of course you're going to be depressed. You're getting older. You don't have the same capabilities you used to. You've lost your friends or loved ones. It's not inevitable. So, most older adults don't ever meet criteria for a clinical depression, what we call a major depressive episode. So it's not to say that the people who get those things are weak or have some other problem. They've developed an illness, just like high blood pressure or diabetes. Depression is an illness that unfortunately they've developed. The good news is that it's detectable and it's treatable. And so if a person or if a loved one is experiencing those things, then go get it checked out. And the first step would be go to your primary care provider and, be ready to, come in with a list of here's what's going on and here's what questions I have. And, should this be something that is evaluated and then could it be treated as well?
Well, with that, I'd like to thank you for being on Dementia Matters, and we hope to have you on again.
I would love to. Thank you very much. Thanks for your interest in the mental health side of things.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research Education and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including a grant from the National Institutes of Health for Alzheimer's Disease Centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and edited by Abishir Adin. Our musical jingle is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. Check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook. If you have any questions or comments, email us at dementiamatters@medicine.wisc.edu. Thanks for listening.